Hi, welcome to the Adoption and Fostering Podcast. This week's episode is a little unusual as it's a recording of a conference workshop that I delivered at the Great North East Conference at the end of April for the ACE Network Northeast. I was asked to speak to professionals about supporting parents, carers and families that live with children who can display challenging, violent and aggressive behaviour, so that's exactly what I did. One note, it's a subject that I'd normally run over a minimum of half a day, so I talk fast and sometimes I skip over issues that I'd normally dig around in for a lot longer. Also, for explanation, I was mistakenly drinking lemon and lime cordial, and that does explain some of the strange comments, as I should have diluted it. And finally, if you go to my Facebook page, Al Coates, and like it, you'll get notifications of the webinars that I mention and I'm going to deliver for professionals in the coming months about the same issue. Well, hello. Can everyone hear me? Yeah, I'm going to start because time is of the essence and I've got 1,000 things I want to say. And some more. I don't know when it first began. I was really conscious that something changed in our household. And my daughter had always been challenging. You know, just sort of standard normal levels of challenge, but actually just really hard, and we'd never had services involved. So what happened was, you know, often, if you're, is any parents in the room? Yeah, parents. And you know, sometimes like shifts in routine, you do something unusual, you go somewhere, you come out, and then sleep patterns are all a bit disrupted. And this is what happened to us. We went away for a day, and we got back late, and we got to bed late. And then in the middle of the night, my daughter woke up. And she said, "I want my mum." And I went, and I could tell she was really angry. So I said, "Actually, right now you're really angry, and I'm not sure that's the best thing. And you know, you've been a good husband." She's not in the room. Being a good husband, there was no contra opinions. I kind of just thought, actually, right, well, there's nothing. Why can't I deal with this? It's 4 o'clock in the morning. I will deal with this. So I shepherded my daughter downstairs, and she kicked off, screaming, kicking, spitting, biting. And I thought, well, actually, the last place, because I've got 5 other children, the last place you need to be is upstairs. We need to be downstairs. So she came at me and she scratched me with her fingernails. So I was bleeding. Then I tried to hold her because I don't know how, you know, I'm not trained in safe holding, but I thought, right, this is really escalating. I need to kind of try and keep her safe. So I kind of put my arms around her, trying not to hurt her, but conscious that she's trying to headbutt me. And she bit my arm and, like, you know, a bite hurts, bit me till I bled. And that really hurts. And eventually she calmed and I calmed and I was literally, I was shaking like this, really jittery. And she said, right, look, you can't, your mum will be around in a few hours, you go back to bed. She went back to bed. And I went back to bed, you know, like sweating and shaking and a bit freaked out, and got an hour's sleep, went to work. And then the next night she did the same. Was scratching, kicking, fighting, screaming, a whole shebang. And the next night she did the same. And the next night she did the same. It went on for, I counted it, I marked it on my calendar, it went on for 165 days. The thing that freaked me out slightly was the responses of professionals. Because mainly I didn't want to talk to anyone. I wasn't a social worker at the time. I was just a dad. I was just some bloke. I knew a bit. I'd kind of been on enough courses. I was an adopter, so I'd done adoption preparation. I was a foster carer, so I'd done that. I'd kind of been in the cycle of continual professional development for foster carers, which can be hit and miss. It was all right. But the main reason was my daughter was 3 years old and I was frightened of her. I was frightened of a three-year-old and I was a 37, 38-year-old man. And I just didn't know what response I was going to get. And I was ashamed. What the hell? How can you not control a three-year-old? Look at you. You got 4 other children at that time. So in this context, long story short, I eventually became a social worker, as if by magic. I became a social worker. Now, that's quite a heavy story, and it's kind of messes with your head a bit. But the reality of this is that often families live in this murky world. Now you all put your hand, who's here is a teacher and they're a parent? Right, you'll know the strange phenomenon that you are a competent functioning professional. However, when you go and sit in your child's, what is that feeling? Yeah, your heart's pounding, you feel like they're not listening to you, and the fact you're a professional sometimes makes it more worse. They go, you're one of them teachers. And what do you know? Well, you're one of them teachers. And actually, we all know that disparity between how we are as professionals and how we are received as parents. I'm being very careful in this room because there's someone who's a teacher at my daughter's school. It just dawned on me, I just saw their face. But actually, it's a really complex dynamic. But I'm just rubbish at this. My legs go to jelly. They talk about things I don't understand. The paradigms of language are just beyond me. Now, I've got lots of stories. I've got more stories than you would ever imagine. Every single one of these slides could be a day's presentation. So you need to strap in, because we're going to rattle through this. And hopefully you'll find it, at the very least, you'll find it mildly amusing. At the very most, it'll open a window into a different world. So, first of all, the ACE Network Northeast is an umbrella organisation. If you want to follow me on Twitter and get down with the kids and that, and I'll be posting pictures of me doing selfies and that. Okay? Second is be kind to yourself. If you're a professional, and I'm going to say some things that professionals might say, and you go, oh, crap, Sticks. That was what I said that to a parent once. I've thought that. I've done that. Be kind to yourself. If you're a parent here, bathe in the glory of everything I'm about to say. I have to say, does anybody know what this is? It looks like battery acid with a hint of lime, because it's made my head go funny. It's supposed to dilute it. That's probably the thing, is it? That's probably why I'm feeling a bit funny. I had one job. No, I'm getting used to it. It's giving me quite a kick. So be kind to yourself, be safe, and I recommend drinking that because I'm high as a kite. Right. I'm going to say lots of funny things, but don't confuse me making you laugh and me laughing with me not actually taking this very seriously. Because this, for me as a family, is deadly serious. This is a massive deal for lots of families and for lots of professionals. I'll tell you what this session is not. I'm not going to give you answers to the problems you have. This is not a solution workshop. The solutions for every family are really specific, really focused, really unique. I am going to talk about some specific types of intervention. I'm going to talk about nonviolent resistance. I'm going to talk a bit about PACE. I'm going to talk about the RRR. But basically, I want to talk about how we as professionals respond to parents and carers and foster carers and aunties and uncles and grandmas who are looking after children who are violent and aggressive. So bear that in mind as we rattle through the slides. Right, so the next thing is that there is a book that I co-wrote. When I say co-wrote is I decided what picture went on the front and someone else wrote the words. And that's available on Amazon, it's out there. Also, I'm going to hopefully do some webinars in the future, I am going to do some webinars, which people can access, and that'll be available through the web page and through the Twitter and through the Facebook page. And we're going to do that, and we're going to work out ways of doing that to actually get some really specific information. And lots of other stuff. Right, okay, if you wanted an extended summary there, you can go on academia.edu and you can actually download the extended summary. It's quite a good little document. So the aims are really clear, that today we're going to define very quickly what CCVAB, Childhood Challenging Violent Aggressive Behaviour, is. We're going to try and get an insight to causes, so you're probably very immersed in that if you've just seen Dr. Wendy. What are the impacts to barriers, the impacts and barriers to getting help? And actually start to think about what that help looks like. And again, it's very, very specific. What works for family A may not work for family B. And we've got to understand that there is no catch-all. And so I guess my starting point is, who here works professionally with families who struggle with the behavior of their children? Who here works with families whose the behavior of their children actually tips over into violence and aggression? Right, so that's maybe 75%, 80%, right? So what is odd is that we don't talk about this stuff. When I first set off on this journey, that no one knew about this, and actually lots of eyebrows were raised when I first started to talk about the challenges we had. Clearly I'm gobby, and I'm happy to talk about all the warts and all of my life, so that's why I was happy to talk about it. So the first thing is childhood challenging violent aggressive behaviour. It's replaced things like child-to-parent violence, and aggression in adolescence, because actually it's not an adolescent issue. It's a childhood issue. It's a 0 to 18 issue. It's 0 to 18 and a bit beyond issue. And it's violence and aggression. It's not just parents, it's carers, it's foster carers, it's kinship carers, it's special guardians, it's a whole raft of people who are living with children who are violent and aggressive. So definition, I'm going to rattle through these three definitions. The first one, the first time it's actually written about is in Harbin and Madden, and they described parent battering, which if you talk to a lot of parents, that is the best definition. I feel battered. The second definition came along in 2004, which is any harmful act by a child, whether physical or psychological or financial, which is intended to gain power, control over a parent or caregiver. I would normally spend a good 35 minutes on this slide alone, but the main issue that people come up with repeatedly is that word intended. We've talked to parents time and time again and said, does your child intend to do this? And they go, no, I'm not sure. So immediately you go as a professional, you go, well, are you a permissive parent? Complicated. Have you set up a system in your family where this child is enabled or allowed to act like this? Does the history of your parenting, has it led us to this point where you get beaten up and you have nothing, you can't do anything about it? So that's the problem of intended is complicated. The last definition is probably a bit close to the mark. Behavior considered to be violent if others in the family feel threatened, intimidated or controlled by it, and if they believe that they must adjust their own behavior to accommodate threats or anticipation of violence. It's catchy, really pithy, to the point, but actually sort of sums it all up, really. I've got a friend who's not in the room, I don't think, but she worked with domestic violence kind of maybe 20, 25 years ago, and she said the way we talk about challenging violent aggressive behavior in children is how we used to talk about domestic violence. We're at the same place they were 25 years ago, that we know it happens. As professionals, everyone in this room is kind of going, yep, it happens. But you do a Google search this afternoon and all you will find is pictures of me. Quite terrifying. Or maybe Dr. Wendy, or the stuff that we've done, because actually there's very limited. There's 140 research articles across the world. Some of them are quite old, and they often talk about very things that don't really ring true. So the literature says that it's predominantly young men, it's adolescents. And there is, that is a phenomenon, that is quite a common thing, but actually, put show of hands, who works with younger children who are not just boys? Yeah. So actually that kind of stereotype, and it's a stereotype that endures because it's really familiar. We can all remember being stroppy teenagers. You're not going out in that, flipping arm, slam the door. We can all extrapolate that to violent and aggressive behavior. They're the children of permissive parents, and some studies have kind of come to that conclusion that actually, as I said before, the parents who've kind of said, yes, you can have whatever you want, whatever you want, whatever you want. And the minute they say no, the children flips out with no fear of consequences or implications. In 2018, we did a survey, and we came to these really basic things that actually the common theme was around the biology of children. That actually, when we looked at so there were children who were perhaps had autistic spectrum disorder, ADHD, dyslexia, dyspraxia, children who were on the special educational needs register. So that's about 1.3 million children in the UK, but it wasn't, not that all those children exclusively display violent aggressive behavior. Am I talking too quick? I'm conscious that I'm really rattling along, aren't I? I'll need to lie down after this, or maybe another sip of the battery acid. Here we go. There you go. Oh, that's making my tash dissolve. So we talk about children who don't have atypical, have brains that are not wired like our brains, FASD. So the next one on our list is experience. And so that's where it kind of today fits in. So we're talking about adverse childhood experience, which is just out there all the time. So obviously we look at a cohort of all kinds of children. We're looking at children through the foster system, through the adoption system, who have all experienced grief, loss, trauma. Full stop. There's no doubts about that. There's no question marks about that. We understand that. We acknowledge that. If there's anyone who's a skeptic to that, you might as well leave now, because everything I say after this will be total rubbish to you. But actually, we also say that is not exclusive to those cohorts of children. That trauma and challenge and adversity is something that's kind of around us. It's everywhere. It's something it's part of life, isn't it? People die. People lose their jobs. Relationships break down. All kinds of things bring adversity into the home and are experienced to different degrees by children. Systems. So, we talk about systems, we talk about school systems. Do school systems re-traumatize children? Really difficult question. Are there consequences that we put in school, are they sometimes about making teachers feel better than children feel better? Are we looking for restoration or punishment? Systems that can be really challenging, but also wider systems. The foster care system, by default, is a system that causes harm. And the question mark at the beginning of any journey into fostering is the harm more or less than remaining where you are? And sometimes it's less, but still it's a harmful act taking a child out of a home and putting it into foster care. Don't confuse children not loving parents just because they abuse them. It's complicated. So what we're saying is it's complicated. And that's why there's no one solution. There's no magic. If I had a magic wand, do you think I'd be stood here talking to you guys? I'd be rich. I'd be as rich as anyone could ever be. It'd be wonderful. So a few statistics which I've kind of touched on. Actually, when we did our survey, we talked about 590 people, and we asked them about their violent and aggressive behavior of their children. And actually what we saw, that there was this kind of peak at 6 to 7, then another peak at 9 to 10, which kind of flies in the face. The Home Office guidance, which is 2014, only talks about adolescence. And actually, if anything, we see that there's a reduction in adolescence. That if families get to a point where they've survived the early childhood years, that there's often a reduction. But the whole focus is on adolescence. So let's talk about the impact on families. We talked to 260 parents, carers, and they said actually 75% of people said, this has trashed my relationships. Nearly 50% said it's impacted employment. You know, again, nearly 50% finances, understandably linked to employment. Health, so people talked a lot. You know, almost 100% of people said living with a child who's violent and aggressive, challenging. 100% of people talked in relation to their health. Now, that's what the book is for. The book breaks that down. He said, looking for his book. The book breaks that down really specifically into some of the really, you know, the nuances of that, of what's going on there, how that's impacting on the specific relationships. So relationships with friends, with other children, with partner, with grandparents, aunts and uncles. Can you imagine what it's like to live with a child who is volatile, who is at tipping point all the time? That actually, if you go to a children's party, your child might be the child who's going to be destructive, that's going to be antisocial, that's going to be violent and aggressive. So actually, you kind of draw back, and we see that that really impacts on people. So the first thing is that talking to people is that parents don't talk. You know, me as a 37-year-old man who was frightened, and I'm not exaggerating, frightened of his 3-year-old. Is she going to kick off again? Because I don't know what to do anymore. So there's a shame, because if you go to the, if after you leave here, all of you go over to Tesco's, and if little Tarquin, who's 3, has a total meltdown, you know, he's having a meltdown because of the no Peppa Pig ham in the frozen food aisle. The shame of that parent and caregiver is palpable. We've all been there, haven't we? Our child displays less than ideal behaviour in public, and we've all just wanted to crawl into a ball. But actually, if you imagine if that behaviour is to the extent where you've had to call the police, or you've had to go to school with a black eye and make excuses for your black eye, then actually what we're talking about is people... Shame is more than guilt. Shame is a corrosive, hideous emotion. We feel shame not for what we've done, but we feel shame for who we are. And we say, we feel the shame of, I am not a good enough parent. I can't do this. I'm a bad parent. I'm a bad person. Victim blaming. So when Tarquin is having a meltdown in the food aisle, because there's no Peppa Pig ham, instinctively we look to the adult and go, we've all done it. What that child needs is... How many times have we thought that? And you know, as good workers with children, we don't say it out loud. Maybe to our friends we do. But we don't say it out loud. What we do is we say, actually, where's the parent of this child and why are they not in control of this child? Where are they? What are they doing? And we've all been experts of other people's children, haven't we? We've all, you know, well... What they need to do is get that child to bed. What they need to do is put in firm boundaries. I have a friend whose child has got ADHD, and he used to take him to football a lot. He played football, and he'd say on the touchline week after week after week, when his child displayed really challenging behaviour, he was a great footballer, so that's why the team kept him. The amount of times another parent would say to him, what you need to do is give me your son for a weekend and I'll sort the little bugger out. And my friend used to think to himself, please do take him, I'll give you 50 quid for food as well. And if you can sort him out, I can get you a job. Actually, victim blaming, it's instinctive. It's just, it's woven into as a society that parents should be able to manage their children. Look at the time. How long have I got? Oh, I've got loads of time left. I'm actually on schedule, which I know you probably don't know, but that's an amazing thing. It's a terrible thing to fall into the hands of the child protection system. Anyone here ever fallen into the hands of a child protection system? I see that hand. Yeah. And I tell you from experience, it's one of the most challenging experiences of my adult life. To have people come into your house and say, hang on, what is going on here? Why are you not in control of this child? Because this child is a danger in the community, or this child has said something about you. Really challenging. Parents are fearful, understandably fearful, of a call from a social worker, because social workers don't ask if they can come in your house, they come in your house. It's really quite scary. Criminalisation, actually the Home Office Guidance 2014 says, actually, if there is an incident, if you as a teacher or in CAMHS or in whatever, you know, education or health, if you know that a parent is being assaulted by an adolescent, you have a duty, it's good practice, to call the police. Who here became whatever they are because they wanted to put kids in prison? Yeah, there's no hands there. That was a bit too far, wasn't it, that one? Well, I don't know. People inside the room may be thinking, well, sometimes I know this kid, little Johnny. Parents don't want their children to be criminalised. The question is, how desperate do you have to be to call the police on your child? How desperate? And we work with families who've called the police because there's nowhere else to go. On a Saturday night at 7 o'clock, they've called the police, said, come and get my 9-year-old. And the police turn up, and that's a complicated dynamic. You know, and you can't criminalise a 9-year-old, clearly. But who wants to criminalise their child? No one does. And who, as professionals, you probably don't want to criminalise children. So then what happens is families become incredibly isolated. But actually, who do you talk to? I've had family members say to me, why don't you just send her back? She's my daughter. She came to me at 16 months old. I'm the only person she knows. Is she challenging? Yes. Send her back. I don't talk to that family member about my child's behavior anymore. How many times do you professionals go, oh, my daughter does that? You go, and the parents been thinking, like hell they do. My daughter called me an effing C. Oof, that really stings. Really stings. Where do you put that as an adult male when your daughter, she's now 14, she calls you an effing C? Do you know what that does to me? As an adult man, that my daughter, there's nothing I can do to stop her. And if you want to come in and give me some smart advice, do it. But I'm doing everything I can to keep myself together. Because actually, I'm feeling quite eroded. Oh, it's become like a therapy session, hasn't it? I've been drinking this by the pint, Lord. It's very strong, but I'm pushing through. But they're wondering why it's going down so quick. They're going to drinking a lot of juice. So, mental health. Relationships, actually, you know, as I've already said, challenges relationships, stigma. You know, really challenging. Families are kind of caught up. I one day, it came to a point, you know, the 165 days where I'm through the night at my door. It got to about day 100, and I said to my wife, I said, look, I'm starting to have panic attacks. I've never had a panic attack in my life. It took me ages to work out what was going on. And she went, oh, me too. And she's never had a panic attack. And we go, oh, these are quite interesting things, aren't they? Oh, very interesting. But I do think that I might unravel and run off, you know, trail of clothes into the sea. Literally, I'm a place I've never been before in my life. And I said to her, look, I think what I need to do is give up work. She went, that's great, but we do have a mortgage. And I went, yeah, I've got enough money in the bank for 2 months' mortgage. But right now, I'm not sure if we'll be together as a family in 8 weeks' time. So I put my notice in, and I literally went home and started to repair our family, and all kinds of crazy stuff happened. But actually, I had a good job. But the impact on families where parents are having to say, well, actually, I need to take the call from the school. And if the school calls, I have to go. I need to be at home before, you know, I need to take my child to school and I need to be there to collect my child from school. That I was a this, I was a that, I was had a high-flying job, but now I work in Tesco's, nothing wrong with that. But actually, people who are just marching time, the impact on their well-being, on their identity. I used to be a, and now I'm just someone who kind of takes phone calls from the school. When my phone, I'm saying this because I know that the teacher's in, when the phone rings and it's the school, I can't describe the feeling I have. What the hell am I going to have to pick up now? Fortunately, my in defense of the school is amazing, but it doesn't change the fact that's how I feel. Right, so we've got 20 minutes. We're talking about that. Oh, haven't I just done that slide? That's amazing, isn't it? Right, paradigms. I'm going to flick through this, but actually what it is that actually different people see it from a different perspective. Medical view will often say that actually this is a, oh, it's a condition. Fix the child. Let's focus, you know, the medical model is that we fix the child. Is it just the child? Because that's the kind of, you know, I'm here as a parent advocate, but actually, I have to be honest, the parents always get it right. Complicated. So medical view would say, well, we'll fix the child. We'll take the child to therapy. We'll drop them off. We'll come back half an hour later. If you could please fix them, that would be great. That's unrealistic. Therapy doesn't work. It does work, but it doesn't work. Not like that anyway. Social care view. We look child-centered. We have paradigms of normal. What, toddler tantrums? Is this just a toddler tantrum? Is this kind of teenage angst that's kind of just gone a bit beyond what it should be? So we have paradigms that we slot it into. Educational view, that it's actually challenging behavior, that it's aggressive, it's antisocial as a whole. Is it Tom Bennett, who's the behavior czar, stroke commandant, who's got some interesting views? But actually, is our education about restoration, or is it about keeping children safe in school, or is it about creating an environment where kids do exactly as they're told? Complicated, very complicated. And the police, actually, I'll be totally honest, of all the people who've done social work in my house, I have to say the police have been the best. But that's another story. Police often have a very pragmatic view, and they know the law. They know that I'm allowed to sit on my daughter if she's trying to hit me with a broom handle. Social workers would maybe see that differently, wouldn't they? But a policeman says that's a proportionate response to someone trying to assault you with a broom handle.
Not in a foster care or adopted.
Sorry?
Social workers wouldn't see it differently if they were foster carers and
adopters. No, that's true. So yeah, just the parents, foster carers, adopters, actually, that social workers see it very clearly that children should, we should be child-focused. And of course we could. Everyone here is child-focused. And we need to be child-focused. That's how our training is, that we safeguard children, we keep children safe. But sometimes in keeping children safe, are we then making parents' lives unsafe? Complicated. I'm not going to do that one. But basically, talking to parents, over 500 parents, sorry, no, that's a bit less, saying actually people who asked for help, how much did they get? 70% said actually it was no help whatsoever. Because a lot of people didn't ask for help, but of the 190-odd who did, 30% said actually it was quite good, 70% said it wasn't, and the other 300 didn't even ask. Age, just an interesting fact that actually when you look at the age of people who have children with violent and aggressive behaviour challenging, that they're often of a higher age, and there's a lot of complicated kind of thinking around that, but that might be that, for one, adopters and foster carers tend to be older, but also children with special educational needs tend to have an older cohort of parents because of just how it works. Right, so now we get to the stuff you really wanted to come to see. The start point. So you as a professional, wherever you are, however you are, the phone call comes in and all of a sudden you read the details that are given to you. You get maybe get a voicemail, a message, an email, a slip of paper, whatever, how it comes to you, a parent arrives at school in tears with a black eye, a child arrives at school in tears with a black eye, and immediately realises it's just so flaming complicated, isn't it? It's like a bowl of spaghetti. Where does it start and end? It's a difficult question. Where does the blame lie? Is this the behaviour of a child, or is this the parent carer? We've got to ask that question. We've got to ask that question. Is this something that these parents are doing that are making a child behave in a certain way? It's a reasonable question. So we understand that children live in systems, we all live in family systems, but often these family systems are broken down for a whole host of reasons that we all of us have specific roles within the family, that we follow certain rules. Sometimes those rules are kind of just explicit, sometimes they're just inferred, sometimes they're just understood, because that's how we've always worked. But those systems seem to have broken down. So we look at the child and we kind of think, I think as a professionals, we've got to ask these questions. How do those children see the world? And who's had attachment training? Yeah, we've all had attachment training, haven't we? Yeah, so just castle that, the internal working model. How does that child see themselves? How do they see the world they live in? And how do they see the people in it? So as professionals, our response has to ask those basic questions. That we listen to children, but we weigh the voice of children. That we don't just accept what they say as written. We think to ourselves, we use our professional curiosity. We're rigorous. We ask difficult questions. The parent carer, we have to ask the really difficult questions. Is this parent doing something that's making this child behave in a certain way? Is this parent abusing this child, or is this child being abused? We have to ask all of those questions, because that's kind of our go-to position. And I speak to lots of families who say the first thing that happened is the safeguarding button was pressed. Now, if you've, the old adage, you know, if the only tool you've got is a hammer, every problem's a nail, isn't it? But often the responses that we have are only a safeguarding response. But actually, as we've already said, to have the safeguarding team rock into your door can be really, really challenging. And often it's murky, isn't it? So I think Wendy told a story earlier. I have a friend who was, their 10-year-old son freaked out and he was kicking and screaming and effing and jeffing. And the dad, trying to protect the younger girl, sort of pushed the child, you know, kind of, he put one child under his arm and he kind of fended the other child off and kind of cornered them into a room so that they could get away and lock themselves in the bathroom. And in doing that, that child got kind of pushed against the wall and got a little scratch, like a hairline scratch across there, on the top of their arm. Child goes into school the next day and goes, I wouldn't do what my dad says. Now, remember, this is a child who's trying to assault the dad and the younger sister. I wouldn't do what my dad says, so he did this to me. So what would you do as a professional? What would you do? Now, the kind of, you would ask questions, you would kind of, but ultimately, if a child is adamant, you have to press the safeguarding button. So that night, the police came in, because it was a mark, physical mark. Police came in, social workers came in, sat the whole family down, mum, dad, younger sibling, the boy. And they said, this cannot happen, we're going to start a Section 47 investigation, we're going to go through all of those processes. And this little boy sat meek and mild, good as gold. And eventually everybody left, knowing that the investigation was going, and this kid went into the garden, got up a pitchfork, and smashed every single window in the back of the house. And the parents stood there, literally thinking, I don't know what to do. Normally we would have calmed him down, we'd have talked, we'd have taken the pitchfork off him by force, because that's what you would do with a child of that age with a pitchfork. Totally disempowered. But we have to ask the difficult questions. So we look at different sorts of parenting, and, you know, authoritarian parent, do as you're told, unquestioningly. You know, children should be seen and not heard. Authoritarian parenting is often linked to children in adolescence becoming kind of pushing back, becoming violent, aggressive, kind of going off the rails. Authoritative parenting is often kind of associated with probably where we'd all aim for, kind of reasonable discussion, negotiation. Here are the rules, but if you can find a better way. Permissive parenting, which often people link aggressive and violent behavior in children to authoritarian, children who are pushing back, and permissive, children who've got no boundaries, who just do what they want, do it when they want, and when the minute someone tries to nip them at the bud, then that becomes problematic. But I would suggest that for a lot of families, they're working in a therapeutic role. And therapeutic parenting is something that's not that familiar to a lot of people, not really known, but it's this idea that actually high-structured but high-nurturing parenting. So thinking back, high-structured and high-parenting actually is these two. There's a picture for you. Anyone? It's too late. So if you go in and you saw an authoritative parent, an authoritarian parent or a permissive parent, now my daughter one time when she was a bit younger, she'd run in the street shouting, my dad's abusing me! It's not a good thing. Right, in her pyjamas, 9 o'clock at night on a, you know, in December. It's not a good thing. And I would run after her. Not a good thing. How does that look, right? You know. So what would you do? a child who's dysregulated. Why was she dysregulated? I wouldn't put sprinkles on a hot chocolate. Right? A proportionate response, she felt. Totally not. But actually, so I would say to her, you can have sprinkles. And I'd maybe get her back, and you can have cream as well. And she would turn around. Now, I'm a permissive parent, aren't I? Well, I'd say I'm not a permissive parent, but I do what I have to do at that moment to get my child to a place where she's safe. So, complicated family dynamics. Right, so this is the interesting slide. We asked families, what do they want from professionals? And they said, really, basically, to understand and appreciate what violent and aggressive behavior is within the family. For professionals to listen when they raise the issue. For professionals to be based on information knowledge rather than presumption. We've got to understand family context. We've got to understand family histories. And that's what all good, and from a social work perspective, we've got to know that family. Not just come in and see exactly what is before us, but actually ask the questions of the GP, of the neighbour, of the auntie, of the uncle, of the teacher, of the nursery nurse, of the whoever. Offer training that's effective. Only one third of parents who've asked for help have got training. A lot of people have had NVR, and 20% have been sent on standard parenting courses. So there's a whole question we could do a whole day on different dynamics of how you support families specifically. But actually, it's different. It has to be really different specific. I've got a slide at the end, I'll show you that. But and the last thing on there is for professionals to act rather than talk about CPVA. And that's what people asked, and I know that's actually a really hard one, the last one. Do professionals act rather than talk about it? They require professionals not only to advise them of options, but to follow through and ensure decisions are acted. So this is my slide to you, which took us 40 minutes to get to, so I apologize. As professionals, regardless of what profession you're in, get the basics right. That we work in a non-judgmental, anti-oppressive, empathic way with compassion. What is going on? Are you okay? That we don't say stupid things to families. Oh, my toddler does that. Really? My teenager sometimes gets cross. Really? Does your teenager phone parent line because you wouldn't sign the letter until you'd read it from school? Because my teenager will. That we listen. One of the really basic things I would say explicitly to social workers, but all professionals, that we'll listen. We're not waiting for our turn to talk. That we'll listen. What are people's concerns? I worked recently with a group of about 15, 20 parents, and I spent 4 weeks going in for 2.5 hours. And you know, all I did was listen. And at the end of it, they said, that was amazing. Because I was the first person that had ever listened to them. I'm not special, I just know how to listen. To get a real understanding of the context, to ask bigger questions, who is this child? What is this child's biography? How did this child get to this point? What is their story? What is their biology? What is their genealogy? Understand the parents. If you lived with a child that's called you an effing, for 6 years, you're probably going to feel a little bit frayed around the edges, and that your response to back is not necessarily going to be as therapeutic as you'd expect. Because I've met and talked with families, and I've been appalled at how I've responded at times. Now, I don't swear. I'm not. That's just. I don't swear. But I've been sarcastic, and I've sniped back. And I feel like I'm a rubbish parent at times. So I don't necessarily need you as a professional to come to my house and tell me I'm a rubbish parent. Because I'm on board with that already. But understand the context of the impact that has on an adult who's caring for a child who's vulnerable. Vulnerable but spiky, proverbial hedgehog. Lovely, but you wouldn't want to necessarily cuddle one. Get educated, start to understand what's going on. Not necessarily, become neuroscientists, but understand what are the causes of challenging, violent, aggressive behavior. offer effective tools, not standard tools. We've got 4 minutes and we're going to go through some of the available tools. Don't offer people standard courses. My daughter would literally eat a sticker chart when she was 7 years old. It doesn't work. Sticker charts set children up to fail. You know, if you can be good every day for a week, and at the end of the week, and you've been good all week, you can will do X, Y, and Z. For some children, you know, if you were with Dr. Wendy, who have, you know, complex views of themselves, that their behavior is not necessarily the captains of their own ships, that they feel a high level of threat and dysregulation. To say to them, if you can get through this life of life-threatening experiences, we'll give you a trip to McDonald's. You go, what stuff you, keep your trip to McDonald's. We have universal rewards in my family where no matter what happens, you're going to get it. Because actually, it's more important that you know that you're loved. Because actually, I know that your behavior, you're not always necessarily able to manage that. Again, I sound like a permissive parent. You're all going, interesting. So there's some really simple ones. There's 4 hours there, but that's complicated. So this idea that we help families to learn how to regulate children, that actually that is one of our primary functions. That if a child is dysregulated, you know, how many times in the history of telling people to calm down, how many times have they been calmed down by shouting at them, calm down? 0 times. Just doesn't work, does it? So actually we need to calm children down. We get children to a place where they feel safe again. If they're acting out because they don't feel safe, take them to a safe place. How many times do we say, if you don't calm down, this will happen, or this will not happen? Are we not just pouring petrol onto a fire? So we have to teach ourselves as professionals get into that zone, but also teach parents to not put unrealistic expectations on children, to help children to be regulated. And the first thing there is we have to regulate ourselves. So we, you know, a lot of work I've done is about getting parents to regulate themselves. You need to maybe pull back from this brink that you found yourself on. But you know, if you're, you know, one of my pet hates, 2 minutes, is slamming doors. After now in my 19th year of parenting, I've reached an almost zen-like state of being able to have doors slammed by children in my house, because it makes me just go funny in my head. It makes me want to go through the door and say, if I'd done that when I was 13, and that helps so much. Because she'll come back down and she'll go, you want to say slamming doors? This is slamming doors. Yeah, but the door broke 2 weeks ago. So I need to regulate myself. I need to get my zen right. I need to get, you know, I do a little hover and a little hum. I get out my little candles. Regulate yourself, regulate children, relate. Let's get back to a friendship thing. And that can, some of this stuff can take hours and even days. And then at the end, we can start to reason with children. Pace, which is the same kind of thing, which is playfulness, acceptance, curiosity, empathy. Non-violent resistance, I'm going to quickly put all of this up here, which is a kind of a really interesting model for behavior, supporting children's behavior. It's a parent coaching model. It's got a high emphasis on actually focusing on the stuff that matters. That actually we stop this constant noise into children's lives. You know, a lot of the children that you're thinking of that are violent, aggressive, there's just this constant noise. And part of the problem is that they really struggle to regulate themselves, and that noise then kind of just becomes overwhelming. So we learn about de-escalation. We break taboos in the sense that we don't do what every other parent does, we do what's right for our children. That we are non-violent, we don't respond in kind, necessarily, you know, sarcasm, all of that. The reconciliation, that actually my daughter and I, she said something to me and really upset me. But I could tell she was dysregulated, so I had to regulate myself. Then I took her from McDonald's. Well, that's crackers parenting. But actually I knew that she just needed to feel love, and for my daughter, that's one way she feels love, is being kind of treat nice. Because actually I do love her. And loving my child is kind of more important than her getting her GCSEs, if I'm honest with you. Can I say that? That we focus on children. What we're going to do as an organisation, I mean, there's this book which kind of really unpicks all of this. I'm at the very end here now. But I think that we need to think differently as professionals, that this is an emerging theme. You know, the comparison with domestic violence is that actually now we all accept that domestic violence happens. We all understand the nuances of the relationships between the perpetrator and the victim. We understand how that falls out in families. But 20 years ago, professionals would go, well, the way to solve domestic violence is for wives to be better cooks. That's what we used to talk about, wasn't it? You know, well, what you need to do is you need to be a better wife. You need to be a better husband. Now we're in a position when we talk about challenging violent aggressive behavior from parents. We're in an equally interesting time as that our knowledge of that develops. We need to understand contexts, understand children, but we need to do that really basic stuff of listen, be empathic, compassionate. Safeguarding is an umbrella over all of that, but we need to do that with a really delicate hand and a really careful hand. That is it. If you want, there is each, as I said, each one of those slides I could literally do an hour on and not even touch the sides. What I am going to do, if you go to the ACE Network Northeast, if you go on the Facebook page or you go onto the website, I'm going to start to do some webinars. Do 30 minutes, do a series of six, get some CPD attached to it, and really unpack each one of these individual things and make it into something that's actually really meaty. And other than that, I would like to thank you very much for being for laughing at me and for the advice about diluting the concentrated battery acid. Thank you very much.